Welcome to Strange Paranormal Podcasts. I'm Jason Kubsick, and this is
Shane Coffey.
And on this episode of Strange Paranormal Podcasts, we're going to have Urban Explorer spends the night in haunted abandoned asylum and soon regrets it. Dubai Customs seizes sorcery items. A Japanese UFO story. The Zanfretta UFO incident. The Ohio Grassman and the Michigan Dogman.
Urban Explorer spends the night in haunted abandoned asylum, but soon regrets it. Urban Explorer Dave camped out in abandoned asylum and claims the facility in the U.S. is haunted. The asylum was previously used to house people with mental disabilities, but he was left spooked out. And Urban Explorer spent, I like how they keep saying Urban Explorer.
Yeah.
Dude was breaking and entering. No, probably, right? Maybe not. Maybe not. But it says, an urban explorer spent the night in a haunted abandoned asylum, but admits it wasn't long before he was massively second-guessing the spooky accommodation choice. Dave, better known as Freaktography, shares his creepy findings with venturing into buildings forgotten in time and known for uploading clips of his adventures with his followers on YouTube. We'll put the YouTube link in here. Let's see here. He took a look around a 30-year-old asylum, which he claims is haunted, and he was left horrified after hearing loud noises from the floor below. He was brave enough to stay overnight in the former asylum and slept in a hammock to make it easier to escape if any spooky occurrences happen. That's where they slept, like right in the middle of that corridor.
That's awesome.
So The decaying building inside the haunted asylum, let's see here. While visiting the site, Dave from Ontario, Canada said, I heard a very loud sound coming from the floor beneath us. It was the sound of someone dragging something heavy and metal across the floor. I froze. Every hair in my body stood on end, and I stood there still and silent. The asylum, which was previously used as a home for the people with mental disabilities, is located in U.S. I found out later it's located in Buffalo, New York. So the complex and grounds were originally built on 203 acres of undeveloped land in 1986. It was registered as, It was registered as a National Historic Landmark, and the building is currently being turned into a hotel. With Dave claiming he obtained permission to enter the east and west wings, which remained untouched. The explorer stayed overnight in the terrifying asylum. The property and heard strange noises despite ongoing renovations. There are many items left behind. Let's hit back on that renovations in a moment. So in his video, Dave spots what looks like an old classroom with chairs and tables left in their exact positions. Down the hallway, there are broken wheelchairs sprawled across the floors, as well as peeling wallpaper and rubble from rotting ceilings. Despite ongoing renovations, there are many items left behind. And in his video, Dave spots, what looks like an old classroom. So there's the pictures of the abandoned wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
That's what it's going to look like.
Wow. But
that's
It says, through horror movies and TV shows, we're often conditioned to think that former psychiatric hospital facilities are a place to fear. The fact that many of these locations now sit abandoned doesn't help. I think you know a little bit about that, Josh.
Yeah.
Nor do the stories of overcrowding that circulated before the deinstitutionalization began in the mid-1970s. On a recent trip to Buffalo, New York, the writer here, it's Elizabeth Yuko. Elizabeth decided to confront her own fears and visit the Richardson Olmsted campus. Once home to the Buffalo State Asylum for the Insane. Unlike many of the other former asylums currently surrounding the rusting fences and no trespassing signs, the grounds and several buildings of the Richardson Olmsted campus are open to the public. There are 13 buildings in the complex. Three have been repurposed into a luxury hotel, and the remaining 10 are still a state of suspension or in suspended ruin. Abandoned since 1974, public tours take visitors through two of the vacant buildings and into a renovated corridor of the Hotel Henry. But more than offering a stunning before and after comparison, exploring the Richardson Olmsted campus also provides an intimate glimpse into the complicated history of the mental health care in the U.S. I'll share this article, the website for this one, down here in the bottom. But I'll tell you guys what, I want to stop there and just discuss the whole situation with paranormal activity in these haunted asylums in these areas. And mainly, Josh, I'm going to focus with you a little bit because you have experience with haunted buildings, shall we say, where horrible or heinous acts have actually happened, and that possibly because these acts, these things that have happened, they just resonate through history and through time, and they reoccur again and again in the building because of such a strong energy. That's my belief, and that's my take on that. But what do you think about this? Like, first of all, being turned into a hotel.
Yeah, I mean, that's just going to be kind of a recipe maybe for some interesting activity for overnight guests. I don't know. Depending on the claims of activity and all of that fun jazz, I mean, it could really be intense, honestly, at that place. It's cool. I mean, that they're repurposing a building, like a historical building like that. Cool, I'll give you that. But man, like at the same time, it's like, it could be crazy.
That's loaded, man. That's a loaded, like, hey, we're going to redo this old asylum.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it'd be like, I mean, taking what, like Waverly Hills and turning it into a 5-star luxury hotel type of thing, you know, is kind of where my brain goes.
You can't tell me that there's going to be some crap. I need to go stay in this hotel.
I kind of want to as well.
Like, crazy stuff. And I'm okay with sleeping in, taking a hammock and hanging it up in the corridor of the place that has not been renovated. I mean, I'm assuming it's the West Wing that's still nearly untouched. It's crazy that it's not that old when it was, you know, deinstitutionalized. However, everything stayed. Everybody's like, well, we're done clocking out. We're getting out of here. And everything stayed there. But I think also a lot of the memories and the pain and the hurt stayed in that building as well. Yeah. Not to say there's not going to be a lot of good things that happen in the building, but I don't think those are the things that stay and that reside in the bones of an old building like that.
Yeah. It is interesting, too, how they just kind of up and leave. I mean, it was very similar here at Malvern Manor, where it's like, I mean, we're finding, you know, documents and things like that, like very sensitive pieces of documentation. It was just like they just left for the day and that was it. That was it. They just closed the doors. It's bizarre to me how any of that is. I don't know how any of that stuff is left behind.
Well, it all has to do with money. I mean, it's the same reason that if a shop closes down, they're not going to spend the money to take the sign down until somebody else comes in and wants to pay to put a new sign up.
That's fair. Yeah.
So if a place just closes like this, unless the stuff is worth something and you have somebody pay you to come in and reclaim the stuff.
Yeah.
If they're not thinking about that, it's just going to get left. Yeah. I mean, there's a the Arkansas Tuberculosis Sanitarium in Arkansas that I've investigated a couple times. I'm actually going back here soon. The basement is just full of stuff, and it's still on an active, like, hospital campus. The surrounding buildings are still used. Wow. It's not a hospital; it's a mental health facility. But
yeah,
they use this building that's 6 stories tall for offices on the main floor, but the rest of it is just left. Now, the upper floors, they took out all the furniture and stuff, but really they just moved it down to the basement and packed it in there.
Yeah.
So there's stuff from the 50s and before just packed in there. There's records in the basement from the 20s, patient records.
Jeez.
And it's all just left there. There's from the 1950s, they made it a civil defense location where they had, you know, cots, water, food, toiletries, all just packed in there in case we went to war.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff's still there.
Like to try to use that toilet paper one time.
But yeah, so it's like they're not going to spend the money to remove that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, somebody could probably go in and make money, offer to pay them to remove that stuff and then sell it. But if they don't know it's in there, then they don't. And then if it sits for a year or more, hospital equipment changes so fast that it might not be worth going in and taking and trying to sell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it honestly, it doesn't really surprise me that they just leave it. I was also investigated a hospital here in Kansas City that closed in like 2010, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They just left everything.
Yeah.
Everything was just left. All the equipment, all the paperwork. And that was a modern hospital. It just closed down. And now they're refurbishing it, but all that stuff is still in there.
Wow.
When we were walking around, it was just walking through all the old stuff piled up.
A lot of that stuff is accounts too, man. A lot of it's accounts payable because you have to think like the hospital that closed bought that stuff. So it doesn't belong to anybody except for under name under said hospital. So since that's closed, nobody owns it. Like they can't. You can't take it. It belongs to the building that was just, you know, deinstitutionalized or closed down. So it needs to stay there, which when you look at it, and I didn't know that until my wife explained that to me. I was like, why don't you take this stuff? Well, because that pencil, that paper, everything that was, you know, as we look at, you know, just like, whoa, why didn't you take this notepad?
Mm-hmm.
Notepad was purchased with the money. It was invested into the building, which has also been closed down. It's all one and the same. It was probably copied or whatever else, but it all stays. I mean, that would be hard to do. But on that note, it's also like kind of the fear of not understanding. And when we talk about haunted places like this, you know, because here this freakography is saying, you know, he heard a noise or something dragging. It's also, you know, he was slept in a hammock being prepared to run. Well, if you're doing that type of an investigation, look, man, there's no sense in sensationalizing it. You're supposed to be there doing an in-depth understanding, trying to figure out what's going on. You're prepping yourself up before you even go to bed to run out the door. Like, how are you going to find out, was that really something being drug or was there a raccoon because this place is opened up? Dragging a can across the bottom of the floor, you know, trying to eat some food. Like, you don't know this if you don't go down there and set up. You don't know this if you try to find out the facts of it. Now, these buildings with these old bones that have a checkered history, the most interesting thing is that sometimes these buildings with these old bones that have kind of a checkered past, the other side of that is this. Medicine changes, techniques change. So what we look at as abuse and neglect in 1950, they looked at it at, well, besides tying somebody up into a bed and closing the door so they didn't have to deal with it, there's also procedures that they were taught to do, as inhumane to us as they may sound now. That was all they knew then. And then moving forward as history changes, but it doesn't matter because it's not an average, normal, everyday person who might tend to be haunting this area. It's somebody who is already mentally ill or disturbed or had a lack of understanding while they're going underneath a procedure. So to them, it's going to be horrific. If they don't understand what was going on or what was being done, it is an absolutely horrific ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
They die during this intimate action. Death is very intimate. If they die during this, only thing they're going to know, regardless if somebody was trying to help them or not, is the fear and the pain and the loss and not being helped. And they're going to have anger.
Yeah. You know,
their soul, their energies, whatever you want to call it, it's not going to be understood. It's not going to know. And from a logical perspective, looking out, we look and we're like, oh, well, this person trying to be helped, or clearly this person was being abused. But what we don't ever know is how did they feel about it? Like, what was their understanding of that level? So yeah, I always want to find more in depth of what happened, not run out the door. So my biggest deal about reading this was I love the paranormal side of this. I love the investigation side of it, but I think it's laughable that this dude was ready to run.
Yeah,
but how are we ever going to find out? The same thing with UFOs, or I'm still going to call them UFOs.
Come at me.
Yeah. UAP.
My thing is that, and I try to look at things from a different angle. Like, I am exactly where you're at. Like, how do we find the antecedent of a haunting, right? Like, what is causing all of this shit? And sadly, when we start talking about things like that or making a YouTube video about not debunking, just asking follow-up questions and things like that, exploring further, it doesn't relate to clicks and likes and subs and all that bullshit. But
if you're running out the door,
I'm putting myself in this creepy abandoned building where I'll be sleeping in a hammock. However, I'm totally ready to run at any given moment should shit go sideways. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to get you some fucking clicks, right? Probably. People are going to tune in and be like, oh my God. Like, that's the problem, is the sensationalism now with the paranormal and all of that stuff. And I mean, for every serious investigator that is out there doing this, there is 50 more paranormal YouTube channels that are going to just sensationalize all of it from top to bottom.
100%. And you know that.
Probably 80% of them probably don't even believe the paranormal exists. That's why they put themselves in these locations and do things like that. You know what I mean? They're just like, oh, whatever. I'm only going to be here for 45 minutes. I will not call out any channel or anything like that, but I have had, this has happened on more than 5 occasions. I have had YouTube personalities or what have you that will literally book Malvern Manor, show up, film for maybe 2 hours, and then they leave. The only reason I know they're leaving or whatever is because I have cameras on the outside of the house, but I also have that keypad lock, which goes right to my phone, that would tell me then when that lock was activated, or, you know, locked or unlocked or whatever. It's like 2 hours. 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you're making it look like you're there all night, and you're making it sound like all of these different things are happening. It's like you're just using the location as a set. That's all you're doing.
I've stayed in that house all night.
Yeah.
A couple times. Jason, you stayed in that house a couple times as well. You know.
And that
goes down in Malvern.
But see, that's what's weird to me, is the fact that it's like, you know, if you would just give the location a fair shake, you probably would get some pretty crazy things that would happen, and you wouldn't have to fake a damn thing. You know what I mean?
No,
it's very odd to me.
No. And it, you know, it's I can honestly tell you of things that I've had happen, you know, that are explainable versus unexplainable, that has been some of the most, I don't know, man, like, totally makes you think differently. Like,
yes,
in your tracks, you're, like I said, your soul goes into your boots, because you've got the blood literally drains out of your body.
It's yes,
the strangest thing. And then you see Jason's smiling face being like, well, I wasn't even there.
Exactly.
So
exactly. You know, it always reminds me, is like, we do have a lot of people that come here for day tours and things like that, that are more skeptical minded, right? And not like cynical or anything like that, but just kind of guarded, and they ask questions, which is appreciated. There's one dude that was here, and he was like an MMA fighter guy, like the last person in the world I would ever want to mess with, because he was just nothing but muscle from head to toe. And he wasn't provoking. Okay. Like, I will say that, like, he wasn't provoking, like coming in here, guns blazing, and be like, show yourself, mamma jamma. He wasn't like that. Like, he was walking around in what we call like the Shadow Man hallway, the nursing home wing of Malvern Manor. And all he said was, well, you're not going to scare me. That's all he said. Okay. Again, he's not provoking or anything like that. He had a group of people with him. But, well, you're not going to scare me, is all he said. At that moment, he said there was a hand, what felt like a hand around his neck, at which he's an MMA fighter. I'm sure he knows exactly what that feels like, but right. He had a, what he said felt like a hand around his neck, and then a voice in his ear that just said, "How about now?"
Oh, crap.
His entire belief structure flipped on its heels in a split second. He went outside. He went out back, in fact, and just sat there crying. I mean, this is a monster of a gentleman, and he's bawling his eyes out uncontrollably because what he thought to be true is no longer true. Like, his entire belief structure was flipped right then and there. And so that, to me, that's the good stuff for me. You know what I mean? I love that shit. But yeah, just to see this man's entire world shift in a split second, because there's no explanation for that.
Dubai Customs seizes a live snake, a monkey's hand, and amulets in a traveler's bag that they say is used for sorcery. This comes from Emirates Al Youm, which is a local paper. Dubai customs inspectors seized a live snake, a monkey's hand, and spells in the bag of an African traveler at Dubai National Airport, International Airport, which were proven to be used in sorcery. One of the inspectors at Dubai International Airport suspected a traveler coming from an African country, so he was transferred to a thorough inspection, and when his bags were subjected to manual inspection, the inspection officers found a live snake inside a plastic box that was wrapped and hidden among the luggage. As the inspection continued, they found the hand of a monkey, a dead bird, eggs wrapped in cotton used in sorcery, spells, talismans, and tools containing scraps of paper. The seized items were transferred to the competent authority, Department of Islamic Affairs and Charitable Activities in Dubai, to inspect them, and the department reported that they are materials used for witchcraft and sorcery. They stressed that witchcraft and sorcery operations are a dangerous scourge that threatens the security and safety of society by manipulating people's minds and exploiting their needs in quackery operations. And Dubai Customs stands on the lookout for attempts to smuggle witchcraft and sorcery materials to reduce this scourge and protect society. Senior Director of Airport Terminal 1 in the Passenger Operations Department, Khalid Ahmed, said, "We at Dubai Customs are aware of the danger of these materials used in acts of magic, quackery, and tampering with people's minds. The department provides all types of training and educational courses to educate inspectors about these materials and their different types and forms." Dubai Customs' keenness to confront the smuggling of these materials and prevent their entry into the country. The department has carried out several seizures of witchcraft and sorcery materials during their previous years as part of its contributions to government efforts aimed at combating acts of sorcery, reducing individuals' dealings with sorcery, and confronting illicit trade. They explain that the materials used in magic and sorcery include scraps of paper of various sizes of talismans, metal papers, rosaries, animal skins, books about magic, bags containing fish bones, dolls in frightening shapes, containers containing blood and liquid materials, and pictures of animals, threads, charcoal, rings, oysters, plant leaves and powders, cotton rolls used in magic, needles used in spells, threads and dark materials, praising the great role of customs men in protecting society from the entry of prohibited.
Okay, oysters.
What? Oysters.
But can we focus on the beautiful verbiage of quackery?
Yeah.
I love it, man. Quackery. That's great. There's so much to unpack here.
I know that most of those countries in that region have a religious aspect to them. So it does make sense that they would take something like this seriously. It's hard to tell from that, which was translated. That article was translated. So it's hard to tell if customs actually takes sorcery seriously or just the act of it and potentially scamming people. But it sounds like they actually take it seriously.
That's what I'm going to say.
The magic is real.
This is dangerous. Don't be touching it. Now, who's to know? Like, I'll tell you what. I am really, really on the team of, that's not my bag. I'm not touching it. Man, I am going to leave that alone. I'm going to remove myself from the area because there's some stuff in there that I'm not messing with. Like, I mean, I have a pet snake. He's right over here. He's sleeping right now. You know, he's a 9-foot-long ball python, and he's like 20 years old. But if I'm on a plane or if I'm in customs and a snake pops up and then a monkey arm or a hand.
Monkey's hand.
Yeah, a monkey's hand and all these other items, like that one image that was there, it looked like a map with hands on it. Clearly, that looked like it was made out of people skin. You know, you know, it looked like it was made of flesh, man. I don't know. But I will be honest with you, when it comes to things like that, I don't mess with them. Yeah, that is, it looks like at somebody's shoulders and the back of their neck. Like from their back.
So we'll take a little bit of a closer look at this and describe it for our audio listeners. Mm-hmm. It looks like a piece of back skin, like you said. It's the same color as a Caucasian human. Mm-hmm. And it looks like the way that they would use this is there's feet drawn out and hands drawn out. I could almost picture someone standing on the feet,
standing on it,
hands down on there, and there's a star at the top and there's a snake across it and like a window kind of drawing in the middle,
maybe a window into another plane of existence,
or, and there's all kinds of other little stuff, and you can see where it's like it's been drawn twice. There's a part here that there's another snake underneath there.
Going another direction,
red, which, that blood. I mean, that looks brighter than blood, but this looks like blood. So,
blood in the window.
What is customs? Is this a risk for them to even touch the material? Like, do they have to do something afterwards to protect themselves?
There's gotta be some cleansing, man. They gotta have a shaman like in house if this is a big deal. Like, all right.
I mean, I'm not sure that maybe the Islamic religions have something like a shaman, but I don't know. Man,
Jason, I believe that stuff that I shouldn't mess with. I'm just telling you, it doesn't creep me out. Okay, not like, oh no, I shouldn't touch this. There's some stuff going on there that probably shouldn't mess with, you know? And I mean, I feel secure in my own spirituality that I'm not like going to be hopefully I wouldn't be taken over by anything, but that could be a very powerful thing. We don't know. And if they're taking this as serious, you know, as it seems like they are, it's almost laughable. But yet it's not, because I'll tell you what, there's things that we just shouldn't mess with. I mean, there are old things we shouldn't mess with. These countries are, we can always speak from a perspective of the United States, which is a fairly young country in the whole grand scheme of the rest of the world. But I mean, there are things in this world that we just don't understand, can't contemplate. So to me, it's always, that's not my bag, baby. I'm not messing with it, you know? But what's your take? What do you think?
I wonder if our customs agents, what they would do, and what the, because I'm sure there's a protocol here. Are they allowed? I mean, are they allowed to, like, how, like, the physical items such as a monkey's hand and snakes, they that has regulations outside of sorcery and magic, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
But
no doubt.
Like amulets and even this drawing that we showed and other religious items, I don't see our customs being able to do anything about it. No. Because it's not illegal here. Maybe it's illegal there overall it to begin with. So they have to deal with it when it comes into the country. I don't know. And the article didn't mention the overall laws against this kind of stuff in that country. But I'm not surprised that this stuff happens, that people use this kind of stuff, whether it's real or not. So
it's actually practicing black magic or attempting to smuggle sorcery items is illegal under Article 316 of the UAE's Penal Code. People caught smuggling black magic objects are subject to either prison term or fines. And it says that we are aware of the danger of using such items in black magic and fooling others, Mr. Ahmed said. So that ties in with just another part of the article that you read, but it's crazy. So it's punishable 50,000 dirhams, which is $13,600. If you get caught with the items, like trying to deportion in the case of non-citizens. So they're not messing around.
Yeah.
But also in Dubai, if you flip somebody off, you can also go to jail. So,
oh,
I mean, sure. There's that, you know, sure. they do have some other laws, and I don't know if this one's true, but some of the taller buildings in Dubai that are just ginormous and gorgeous, they don't have plumbing. They actually have a toilet service that comes and empties out the toilets, like pump trucks. Yeah. So that's, I don't know if that one's true. I just found out from some of my students, but at any rate, I'm not giving them the bird and I'm not messing with witchcraft stuff over there, uh-huh. But I don't know. You're right, man. Like, is it something old world? That's what just keeps coming back to me. Like, why is it such a big, is it a big problem there? Is it more prevalent than it is here? Or is it that their standards and their laws are just more strict that we just kind of look over that, you know, mm-hmm. Kind of what you were saying. Like, I don't know, but on the other side of that,
society there holds it as something true. Versus mm-hmm. our society here holding it as something not true. There's a whole different view on it. Like, it's a whole different perspective. So it's could be happening just as much here, but it's not seen as a threat by government authorities. So it's just not talked about, or obviously, like I said, the few items that may be regulated coming into the country is a completely different thing here than it is there. UFO stories of the week. This one comes from Japan. My name is Tatsumi Tanaka. I am 42 years old and the owner of the beauty parlor in Anaka City, Gunma Prefecture. Last Sunday, October 23rd, we don't know what year this is, I have seen a UFO, and it was the first time such a shocking matter happened to me. I never believed that I would have such an experience, but surprisingly, it happened to me. I was on the second floor of my house and casually looking out the east window when I caught sight of a white object, rather big, the shape impossible to describe, rising softly and perpendicularly from the surface of the ground. We could see Mount Akagi in the north northeast direction, and it was in this direction that the UFO rose, but I could not tell how far away it was. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I wondered what it was. I thought at first sight it must be an airship or a balloon. I strained my eyes to see better, but could not understand what it was. After rising straight up, it stayed for a while at a constant height and seemed to become blurred outside. It then turned into the oval shape that is familiar with us from TV or magazines. It was the same object, but not the same shape as before, but the outline was not clear. Soon after, it moved to the right at a fast speed. It looked like a low altitude flight, but it all happened so quickly, and then it just disappeared in the cloudless blue sky. I was so shocked, I felt out of my mind. This thing was so huge, but it disappeared just in a moment. I tried to explain what I saw to my wife and child who were right beside me, but I couldn't. I just pointed and could only shout in surprise. My wife was very annoyed and said that everyone cannot see UFOs. Only some people do and some don't. By then it had disappeared. I was so excited that I went outside with my daughter and searched the sky, but it was too late. I still can't believe I have had such an experience. I will never forget that moment and that speed. Something beyond common sense. It means to me that things exist that we don't understand. So I wanted to include that one because there's like an ongoing meme around at least the United States that UFOs are only sighted in the United States. And that's not true at all. It's commonly thought that UFO abductions and that sort of thing is just like a Western United States thing. At least that's what people joke about. So I picked one, an Asian one, and it sounds very similar to anything you'd see here.
Yeah, it does. It was ironic that the mother had said some people see them and some people don't. Like,
that is true, though. Some
people aren't looking, you know.
There are plenty of instances of stories of people seeing a UFO standing next to someone and that person doesn't see them. It's the same with ghosts, with hauntings. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a very typical story, just happens to be in Japan,
not Western America. So take that, meme. Take that. Okay, I will share a UFO story. I'm going to share a story about the Zanfretta UFO incident, the mysterious event that took place on December 6, 1978. So you have to picture this. Pierre Zanfretta, a night watchman in Torreguilla Village, embarks on his routine patrol at 11:30 p.m. Little does he know this night will be anything but ordinary. As Zanfretta enters the villa's backyard, his eyes lock onto an intriguing sight, an oval-shaped red object approximately 33 feet in diameter hovering in the night sky. The garden around him bathes in an otherworldly glow, adding to the surreal atmosphere. Suddenly, he finds himself in the presence of beings unlike anything he's ever encountered. Massive green creatures with unsettling mottled skin, sending shivers down his spine. The intensity of the encounter leads Zanfretta to call for help. His voice is laced with fear and urgency. Upon arrival, his supervisors discover him in a state of shock, lying unconscious. The aftermath of this chilling experience sparks an investigation by the Italian police, revealing the enigmatic marks, each spanning 9 feet in diameter, where Zanfretta claimed to have witnessed the UFO. So, according to Zanfretta, on December 6, 1978, at approximately 23:30, he was examining the Villa Costa Nostra, and upon entering the backyard, saw a red oval object with a diameter of over 10 meters. At this point, he called his supervisor. 33 foot is 10 meters, by the way, for the Americans. He called his supervisor, who recalled him screaming. On turning around, Zanfretta reported running into beings who were 9 foot tall, 3 meters, 9 foot eight tall. with mottled skin as though they were fat or wearing a rumpled suit. The creatures had yellow, triangular eyes and clawed feet. When the supervisor asked if he was being attacked by Minzen, Freda said, was said to have responded, "No, non sono unami, no sono umini." English is, "No, they are not men," at which point the communication was lost. Said Freda was later found unconscious and in a state of shock by his colleagues. Later, when under hypnosis, Zanfretta would claim that the beings had abducted him and taken him into a bright room in their craft. He also added to the description of the aliens by saying, "They are green with triangular yellow eyes, big thorns. They have green flesh and their skin is full of wrinkles as if they were old. Their mouths look like they were made of iron and they had red veins in their heads, pointed ears and arms. Pointed ears and arms with fingernails." It's kind of strange, but with round things. "They came from the third galaxy." The third galaxy. The incident became famous after Zanfretta was invited onto the show Portobello to tell his story. An investigation was launched by the Carabinieri, which is the Italian police, who were able to find 52 witnesses who also claimed to have seen the UFO. According to one, the craft was visible at 19:30 on December 6th and hovered at a height of approximately 1,500 meters or 4,900 foot, where Zanfretta claims the craft had touched down. Investigators noted there was a horseshoe-shaped impression approximately 6.6 foot in diameter. So there is a book about the Zanfretta UFO incident that I think I'm going to pick up because there's a lot more details to this story. Obviously I'm just given a brief synopsis of it, but it's crazy. 52 claims corroborating his story. And, you know, obviously his supervisors came and found him, but the description is crazy. Mottled skin. I'm seeing these crazy, just horrible faces.
So it's definitely, you know, a classic one, well known, but it's also an outlier because of the description of the beings. The triangle eyes is not something you hear in hardly any other UFO reports. I don't know if I can think of one, or alien reports. I don't know if I can think of one.
Yeah, I've never
heard the yellow triangle eyes. That's kind of, I wonder if he's talking about the shape of the iris or the shape of the whole eye. I don't know off the top of my head.
But the mottled skin is the one that also gets me because I haven't heard, and I'm sure you have. I sent you an image that you can share on our screen if you want to do that of these creatures. So what gets me about it is the skin, like this mottled skin, and because that's something that I've not heard. So I'm wondering, is it mottled skin? Is it a type of suit per se that's hanging off of them? Triangle eyes, Jason, were they triangle eyes or are they part of a mask where he was looking through them? The mouth made of iron, was it a breathing apparatus? You know? So I'm thinking breathing apparatus, suit, eyes. I mean, versus what he's saying, red veins. So this is 1978. Obviously, it wasn't like a long time ago to where things could be easily, convoluted. But still, I like to weigh this option. I the hanging skin and, you know, the ginormous.
So the hanging the skin. Giant suits. Is it could be similar to other descriptions. There are a lot of descriptions of from the past that are somewhat similar because everybody can picture the Michelin Man, right? So the Michelin Man, when it first came out, people were seeing creatures in the fields, alien creatures in fields and in different instances that look like the Michelin Man, even some that look like deflated Michelin Man. So that's almost the same sort of thing.
Yeah. 9.8 feet tall, you know, just these ginormous creatures.
So yeah, it does kind of
see what, yeah.
It does have the yellow triangle eyes. It even has almost the Michelin Man kind of line.
That's what I was going to say.
Here's the other image. So that one, they did describe them as fat, though. I wouldn't say that either of these are fat. I guess it could be thicker torsos. Yeah, I mean, that could be that their brains are glowing.
Yeah, so it says that they had red veins on their head.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, so, I mean, this is definitely different. Some aspects are similar to some other UFO alien encounter stories. Yeah. The yellow eyes, I've heard of yellow eyes, the triangle shaped eyes is not a common thing.
Yeah.
Even the height isn't necessarily a common thing either. Though there are reports of like insectoid type creatures that are that height. But for the most part, this is definitely something outside of what's common in alien encounters. Okay, so this is the Ohio Grassman. The Grassman, also known as the Ohio Grassman, Kenmore Grassman, or Orange Eyes, is a tall bipedal hominid that stalks the woods of Ohio, hence the name Ohio Grassman. It is reportedly very similar to Bigfoot. It seems to be much more aggressive than any other Sasquatch species. The Grassman gets its name from the small hut-like living structures or nests it builds out of tall grass. The first prominent sighting of the Grassman occurred in the small village of Minerva, Ohio, in August of 1978, when the grandchildren of Minerva residents Evelyn and Hal Clayton, along with their friends, ran inside screaming about a hairy monster they saw in the gravel pit outside. When the couple went out to investigate, they saw that the crying children had described. It was covered in dark matted hair, sitting in the pit and fiddling with discarded trash. It was admitted to be around 300 pounds. The Claytons fled, but this would not be their last encounter with Ohio's ape man. The Claytons would see the Grassman many times after their initial encounter. One night, it was seen peering at them through their kitchen window. Hal ran for his gun, but the primate was gone before he returned. The area was later investigated by police, and although there was no sign of the hairy humanoid, several faint footprints were observed in the mud, and a terrible smell still lingered in the air. The Ohio Grassman was later seen by the Claytons atop a hill near the strip mine at night. The next month, in broad daylight, the couple observed two hairy bipeds on the same hill. It was only after these reports by the Claytons were made that a startling connection was made. Days before the gravel pit incident, the Claytons' German Shepherd was found dead, its neck broken, presumably killed by the hairy beast. The Minerva case, along with its infamous Sasquatch, would form the most complex and important Bigfoot investigation in Ohio's history. Even so, the year 1978 was not the first mention of such creatures roaming the Buckeye State. In the 1700s, Indian natives to the Ohio grasslands spoke of a race of bipedal ape men, referred to as Wild Ones of the Woods, that lived nearby. The Native Americans would leave out food for the creatures in an effort to keep peace. Again, in the late 1800s, sightings of a similar hairy biped were made by the Ohio River. The hominid was apparently tried to throw, oh, had apparently tried to throw a man out of his carriage, but retreated when his daughter, riding as a passenger, threw several stones at it. I wonder why she had the stones in the carriage. It is unknown whether these are all Grassman sightings or possibly sightings of a similar kind of Bigfoot, and if the latter, how related the two or more species are. Here's some characteristics of the Ohio Grassman. Height ranges from 5 to 10 feet tall, generally to the 6 to 7 foot range. Footprints range 10 to 20 inches long. Some footprints appear to have claws, pigeon toes, or flat feet. Some prints are three-toed. Handprints have possibly been found. Estimated weight of 300 to 1,000 pounds is a big range, but generally 350 to 500 pounds. Some reports say it growls and barks with unusual heavy breath. Other reports say it sounds like the cry of a baby with the scream of a woman. It has a strong odor, like the odor of rot, that lingers in the area even days after it's vacated. The appearance is a snub nose, peaked or deep-set eyes, very chesty. Does that mean big boobs? Blackish brown in color, long arms, pointed and bulky head. Fun fact, that Patterson-Gimlin film, that Bigfoot has big boobs too. If you ever take a good close look at it. It said it's shaggy, covering all of the body except the palms of its hands, has luminous red or orange eyes. Some reports say it looks like a gorilla, but appears to stand straighter. Other reports claim the creature looks more like human than an ape. Initially, the creature has reported to have no visible neck, and its face was not discernible due to the veil of long hair. So, yeah, this is, it says it's up to five have been seen in a group at one time. They are known to kill dogs and deer. Mothers and babies have been observed. Feces has been found. Hair strands up to 16 inches in length have been found and analyzed by Ohio State University, but haven't been identified. So, yeah, this is pretty typical of other Bigfoot Sasquatch sightings, I would say, except for the grass huts. I mean, there's so many different types, I guess, of Bigfoot creatures, Sasquatch creatures that... I don't see this as being a lot different than those, but this one likes to live in grass huts.
I would like to find a Bigfoot creature or a Sasquatch that had big booty cakes. They're always talking about the breasts. I'm a butt man.
Yeah.
I'll go into the wild looking for big booties. I mean, that's okay. Just what I'm going to do. Okay. Along with the grass man, which is the Sasquatch kind of theme that we have going on, I'm going to talk about the mysteries of the Michigan Dogman and the Beast of Bray Road. So, unveiling the mysteries of the Michigan Dogman and the Beast of Bray Road. In the realm of folklore and urban legend, certain creatures continue to captivate the imagination and fuel the curiosity of enthusiasts and skeptics alike. Among these intriguing beings are the Michigan Dogman and the Beast of Bray Road, both of which have left an indelible mark of tapestry of American cryptids. I would say the word is indelible, and I mispronounced my own word. The saga of the Michigan Dogman traces back to the late 19th century, specifically in 1887, when startled lumberjacks in Wexford County, Michigan, claimed to have encountered a bizarre creature described as a towering bipedal entity with the body of a man and the head of a canine. This mysterious being possessed piercing blue or amber eyes and emitted a haunting howl reminiscent of a human scream. What sets the Michigan Dogman apart in folklore is its purported 10-year cycle, purportedly manifesting in years ending in the number 7, according to local legends. While Concentrated sightings have been reported primarily in Michigan's northwestern Lower Peninsula. The origins of the cryptid intertwine with the region's indigenous history and whispers of its presence dating back to the days of the Ottawa tribes along the Manistee River. However, the Michigan Dogman remained veiled in obscurity until the later half of the 20th century, when accounts of an alleged encounter began to surface with increasing frequency. An early notable incident occurred in 1937 in Paris, Michigan, when Robert Fortney encountered a pack of wild dogs, one of which reportedly displayed bipedal locomotion. Subsequent reports emerged from various locals, such as the Allegan County in 1950s Manistee, La Crosse Village in 1967, adding to layers to the lore surrounding this creature. Parallel to the Michigan Dogman's mystique in the legend is the Beast of Bray Road, a wolf-like entity that purportedly prowls the environs of Elkhorn, Walworth County, Wisconsin. Initially documented in 1936, this creature's sightings gained traction in the 1980s, with witnesses recounting chilling encounters involving vehicle contact, eerie nighttime observations, descriptions of the Beast of the Bray Road depicted year. Adorned with fur or hair, boasting a lupine visage with glowing red or orange eyes. Witnesses reported to seeing in transverse terrain both as a quadruped and a biped, so on all fours or walking upright, blurring the boundaries between folklore and reality. Despite attempts to rationalize these phenomena, misidentifications of known animals or escapees of imagination, the enduring allure of Michigan Dogman and the Beast of Bray Road persist. While skeptics may attribute sightings to mundane creatures like wolves or bears, a plethora of witnesses' testimonies allege that physical evidence challenged conventional explanations. Cryptozoologists who delve into the study of undiscovered or hidden animals tread a fine line between scientific scrutiny and the allure of the unexplained, grappling with the complexities of reconciling folklore with empirical data. In the annuals of cryptozoology, the Michigan Dogman and the Beast of Bray Road stand as figures, embodying an enduring fascination with the unknown that pervades human creature culture. Whether regarded as mythical entities or elusive cryptids, these beings continue to spark debate, inviting both believers and skeptics to unravel the mysteries surrounding and shrouding their existence. That image that you're showing right there is crazy, because
it is. Is it a trap cam, like a game camera?
It looks like a game camera. So when I first saw this, I thought it was a game cam, but when I looked at it again, I actually thought that it was a camera on the front of a vehicle, like you're sitting on the side of the road, because you see in the background of the top image on the left, you see 40 mile per hour, right?
Yeah.
You see that sign. I'm assuming that this is a car pulled over to the side of the road, or a car driving by with their dash cam on, and they caught a glimpse of it as they were driving by.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, but I wonder if this is a coyote reacting,
jumping,
car driving by. Maybe that's the only thing I could think of. We don't really have a sense of height, though. The height is not very high, because you can kind of estimate its height based on the typical height of a sign for miles per hour for speed limit. It looks like if this was next to that sign, it would be shorter than that.
But the legs on this creature in the image, those legs are not made for bipedal walking. In fact, there's no like calf muscle to help hold it up as well. So
yeah, Yeah, that is interesting. But it almost looks like it's like jumping backwards because it was maybe running forward and didn't want to get hit. That's the only thing I could think of what it could be.
Well, and that's how you should look at it. You should always look at it to try to reason out anything and everything before you come to the conclusion of, yep, this is definitely the Dogman, or this is definitely the Beast of Bray Road. You have to look at like the obvious things. Now, it It's a crazy photo. And the, what gets me is if this is a dash cam and the camera and the vehicle is moving, what kind of dash camera are these people using where they just had an animal that had jumped up and there's no blurred image of this animal moving that fast? You know, did they slow down and go frame by frame? Were they able to go frame by frame? If you've ever edited video, that's a really hard thing to do.
You can take any video and put it into programs and go frame by frame. As far as the blurriness,
it's difficult to pull it in. Yeah,
it is. I mean, maybe assuming this is not what we discussed about it jumping away, maybe this is someone taking a photo from a stopped vehicle on the side of the road. That would explain no blurriness or motion blur. So I don't know.
It's just, what do you guys think? Crazy photo. Let us know what you think. We need more input, but we like to try to pick these things apart as well, because while the stories are great, if you are able to take away all the sensical things about a photo and then you're left with what remains, that's when you really start to, that's when you really start to kind of dive more into the cryptozoology side of it.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining in with us. You can find us on all socials. You can find us at strangeparanormal.com. The number is 913-535-6322. Send us your strange, odd, and fascinating stories. And once again, don't forget to please check out our merch.
Do it and send us a text and I'll respond to you.